Go ahead and turn, if you will, over to Nehemiah chapter 3. Nehemiah chapter 3, we'll be spending the majority of our time this evening in this chapter, so you might want to mark it, and we'll be returning back there several times. Oftentimes, when you study the book of Nehemiah, chapter 3 is the chapter you skip over, and that's because it is loaded with Jewish names. In fact, you don't know the temptation I had to preach this on a Sunday morning. And when the man came to ask what I wanted read to tell him, Nehemiah chapter 3, just to see the look on his face as he read through all of these names. I know many times when I've taught this lesson, or taught Nehemiah rather than this lesson, taught the book of Nehemiah, I've not paid a lot of attention to chapter 3. And that's a shame. So this evening, I want to correct some of that. And to understand that within this chapter, though it is somewhat difficult for an English speaker to read through, still, there are so many valuable lessons that we can gain from it. And as we do so this evening, I want us to think about our place on the wall, to understand the lessons that we can gain as builders for Christ. And in doing that, I want us to understand that chapter 3 of Nehemiah is showing us what can happen when we work together. It's a great chapter on the camaraderie that we have in the service of God. And so as we look at this chapter, it's showing us the kinds of attitudes that we need to have, striving together, working together to be a people of God. And we need to understand how that it so mirrors the work that we're called on to do today. We think about what the apostle wrote to the Ephesians in chapter 4, verse 16. When he said, "From whom the whole body joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love." We think as well about what the writer Jude said in verse 20 of his short epistle when he said, "But you, beloved, building yourselves up in the most holy faith and praying in the Holy Spirit." This evening, we've already had a very good introduction to these ideas in the songs that we sang. They talked about the work that we're called on to do, how that we are called on to arise and to build. And so this evening, as we study this chapter, and as we think about these things, I want us to understand what we can do as we work together in the kingdom of God. I'm not going to spend a lot of time with the rest of the book of Nehemiah tonight. However, I do think it's important for us to set the stage of what's going on. So just very briefly, let's talk about the work that Nehemiah found that he had to do. You'll recall that there have already been folks who have returned from the land of their captivity back to Jerusalem. They came under Zerubbabel and they came under Ezra, and they worked at least to an extent, but that work had ceased. And the walls of Jerusalem, all of these years later, after King Nebuchadnezzar had torn them down, about a century has gone by, and those walls are still lying in ruins. Nehemiah had probably never seen the city of Jerusalem. Most likely he had been born in captivity and had found his way into the service of the king, the captive king. But yet he has brethren who come to him, and they tell him about the sad state of the city of Jerusalem. In fact, backing up just a bit to chapter 1, verse 2 says that Hanani, one of my brothers, came with certain men from Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews who escaped, who had survived the exile, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, "The remnant there in the province who had survived the exile is in great trouble and shame. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are destroyed by fire." Now, when Nehemiah heard this, there was sadness. But nonetheless, it created within Nehemiah a desire to get to work, a desire to go back to the city and to begin the job of constructing these walls once again. And so we go to chapter 2 now. And here is Nehemiah in the presence of his master, the king. Nehemiah is sad, and the king recognizes that to be something that is not typical of Nehemiah. And so in verse 5, we pick up in the midst of the conversation. The king is asking what he requested. "And I said to the king, If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's graves, that I may rebuild it. And the king said to me, the queen sitting beside him, how long will you be gone, and when will you return? So it pleased the king to send me when I had given him a time. And I said to the king, if it pleases the king, let letters be given to the governors of the province beyond the river, that they may let me pass through until I come to Judah. So Nehemiah is ready. He understands the job that he has to do. But there's something else Nehemiah understands. He understands that he cannot do this job by himself. This is not something that is a one-man proposition. And so we find going on down in verse 17, as he's talking to his fellow Jews here, then I said to them, you see the trouble we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gates burned. Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem that we may no longer suffer derision. Nehemiah goes to his brethren and he says to them, you know as well as I do what we've got to get done. You understand that these walls are down, that the gates are not there, and we've got to work together. But now with that, Nehemiah also made sure that the only ones who were going to be working on that wall were the ones who were absolutely qualified to do it. Let's continue on with verse 18. It says, and I told them of the hand of my God that had been upon me for good, and also of the words that the king had spoken to me, and they said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for the good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite servant and Geshem the Arab heard of it, they jeered at us and despised us and said, what is this thing that you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king? Then I replied to them, the God of heaven will make us prosper, and we his servants will arise and build. But you have no portion or right or claim in Jerusalem. What do we find? We find that there was work to be done, and one man couldn't do it alone. So with his brethren, they set out to make this work possible. However, they make sure that it's only those who are authorized by the Lord, who meet the Lord's approval, who are going to be working on this wall. Now, with all of that being said, what I want us to understand is that no matter what era we live in, whether we were the Jews before the exile, whether we're those Jews working on the walls, whether we are Gentiles who are living in the 21st century, there is always work to do for the people of God. And just as Nehemiah rallied these people to get busy, so we too need to be rallying our fellow Christians to get busy with the work at hand. Now, with all of that being said, the time comes where they begin in earnest to work on these walls. And so, as we look to chapter 3, we find just immediately a very powerful lesson for us. We don't have to go past verse 1. Because what we find within this verse is amongst these Jews who are constructing that the leaders are actually leading in the work. But it's not Nehemiah we're talking about here. It's actually a different leader. Note with me verse 1. It says, then Eliashib, the high priest, rose with his brothers the priest, and they built the sheep gate. They consecrated it and set its doors. They consecrated it as far as the Tower of the Hundred, as far as the Tower of Hananel. What possibly could we learn from this verse? Well, can you think of the reasons that the high priest could give for not working on this wall? Might he have said that in my position, I really am not a man of physical labor. I'm a man really of spiritual labor. And it might very well have been that he tried to convince his fellow Jews that he was too holy, that his work was too important to get his hands dirty here on the wall. After all, he needed to be busy tending to the spiritual needs of the people. But that's not what it says. In fact, it says not only Eliashib, but his brothers, the priest. In other words, all of these men who would be recognized as spiritual leaders within the nation of Israel, within this group of Jews, they were busy constructing the wall. And doesn't that need to be the case with any leader? We go to secular matters, and isn't that the case? Why is it that our presidents, no matter who that president might be, at least since the advent of TV, they want to be seen working? And so on Thanksgiving, you'll oftentimes see the president in a soup kitchen. Or if there's a hurricane or a tornado that comes through, there'll be a shot of the president there helping to clean up. Why? No matter if he turns off the work when the camera turns off, he's made his point that as a leader, he knows that we as Americans expect him to be a part of the work that he's calling on others to do. We see that certainly in the case of secular leaders, but how much more importantly should we see that in the work of spiritual leaders? Of course, our obvious point to that would be we consider the work of an elder. An elder, like Eliashib, must be a man who is leading by doing. He's a man who is a leader by leading himself. That's within the qualities that's to be found within an elder. We think about Titus 1 and verse 7, how the first part of this verse begins, "For an overseer as God's steward." In other words, he is a worker for God. So how is this worker for God going to encourage others to be workers for God? It's by the fact that he is leading through his example. You want to see an effective congregation. You want to see a congregation that's working. Look at the leadership of that congregation. And if you say, wow, that's a group that's busy and it's active and it's caring for the needs of others and it's interested in saving souls, I can almost guarantee you that if you look at the elders of that congregation, you're going to find men who are interested in souls, who are out there teaching, who are being a part of the work of a congregation. That also needs to be the case with men who are desiring to be elders. They need to get in the habit, even before they are, put in that position, for lack of a better term, that they are showing themselves as men who are leading by their example. I heard Bill Hall once talking about elders and when churches began to look for elders. And he made this statement. He said that potential elders are the men who are already doing the work of elders. And I think that's right. If a congregation says, we're going to appoint elders or we're going to select new elders, and everyone looks around and says, I really don't know who's qualified for that. There's probably not anybody qualified. When a congregation begins the process of looking for elders or adding more elders, if there are not names that immediately come to mind, there's probably no man qualified for that work. Because you have faithful children and you're the husband of one wife does not make you a qualified elder. An elder is a steward of God. He is a man who is busy in the work of the Lord. And so as a congregation begins looking, they say, yeah, I know Brother so-and-so. He's always there. I know this man. He's always out teaching. He's inviting his neighbors to church. He's talking to people in the community. I know he and his wife, they're always there helping with the needs of the sick. Those are the men who are leading by example. But would this point apply to others besides elders? Absolutely. Anytime we are in a leadership role, whatever that leadership role is, we need to be seen doing the work that we're calling on others to do. Whether that's teaching a Bible class, leading people's minds in a discussion of God's Word, whether that be helping people in some other way, whether that be trying to bring our young people up in godly ways, we are a part of the work. That's what we see here. And so we need to be that way. Because we must remember that there is no nobility in Christianity. There is no titled class in Christianity that says we have a group that's separate. they're not a part of the wall workers. They sit and watch. No. From the example of Eliashib and these priests, what we find is that they must, whomever that leader is, be leading by example. Now, let me bring out a second point. Not only do we find leaders leading here, I think another point that comes out quite clearly is that there is no need to be a professional builder. I want us to read verses 6 through 12, and I'm going to read every name just like the Hebrews would have said it. So rest assured of that. There'll be no, you understand. We'll do our best. Verse 6. Joiada the son of Pasca and Meshullam the son of Bezadiah repaired the gate of Yeshana. They laid its beams and set its doors, its bolts, and its bars. And next to them repaired Melatiah the Gibeonite and Jadon the Marathonite, the men of Gibeon and of Mizpah, the seat of the governor of the province beyond the river. Next to them Uzziel the son of Harhiah, goldsmiths, repaired. Next to him Hananiah, one of the perfumers, repaired. And they restored Jerusalem as far as the broad wall. Next to them, Raphaiah, the son of Hur, ruler of half the district of Jerusalem, repaired. Next to him, Jedidiah, the son of Harifi, repaired opposite his house. And next to him, Hattush, the son of Hasbaniah, repaired. Melchijah, the son of Haram, and Hashbub, the son of Pahath Moab, repaired another section and the tower of the ovens. Next to him, Shalom, the son of Halahesh, ruler of half the district of Jerusalem, repaired, he and his daughters. Did you notice something about these people? Did you hear something in there about perfumers and goldsmiths and leaders of half the districts and daughters? These were not professional builders. Their chief ability was availability. And because they were available to take part in this work, that's exactly what they did. And it's interesting to me that within this chapter, 35 times we read the word repair, the idea of strengthening and encouraging and making strong. So here were people from all walks of life, from all different occupations, who had come together to do a job. That, to me, sounds very similar to a definition of a local church. A group of people from all different walks of life, from all different kinds of backgrounds, different occupations, who have a common goal in mind. And that's to do the work of the Lord. I think too often we're tempted to think that only professionals can do the job. We're tempted to think that only people who are really, really good at something are the ones who are called on to work. That's not the case. The Lord concurs with this point, that one need not be a professional builder. I want to take a verse out of context here, but I think I can make an accurate point with it. As the Lord was talking to His disciples, He said to them over in the book of Matthew chapter 10 and verse 42, "Whoever gives one of these little ones even a cup of cold water because he is a disciple, truly I say to you, he will by no means lose his reward." And here's the point that I want to make. The one who gives a cup of cold water may not feel he's doing a very good work. He may have looked at himself in the midst of all of these apostles and these disciples and perhaps even the Lord himself. And he might have said, "The work I am doing is small and it's minimal and there's not much point in it." The Lord saw fit to mention him. The Lord saw fit to say, "Here is something that needs doing. And if it's something that needs doing, there needs to be someone who's going to do it." As we consider that idea, I think it may often be that when we think about the work of the Lord, what we're talking about this evening, that sometimes we have a real tendency to narrow our scope to the point that we are looking solely at what goes on in this building. And so someone says, well, I can't preach a sermon. And there's no way that I can teach a Bible class. And I can't lead a song. And I can't lead a prayer in front of all of these people. And so there's really nothing for me to do. I'm not a professional. We need to be very, very careful if our scope is narrowed to that point. Because the Lord gives no one permission to say, I am unqualified for the work of the Lord. In fact, as He was talking to His disciples, He said to them over in Luke chapter 10 and verse 2, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into His harvest. You know, there's varying amounts of work that can be done when the harvest is pulled in, is brought in. Yesterday, I went with my parents over to where my mother grew up, and we went down to some of the land that she owns, her home place, I guess about 40, 50 acres there. And we were just kind of walking, and she was reminiscing and talking about when she used to pick cotton there. And, you know, I was kind of quizzing her a little bit on that. I got to thinking, when she was 5 or 6 years old, she probably didn't pull in much cotton. Probably that sack didn't get filled up as quickly as her brothers, who were 10 years plus older than her. Her mother, who was picking there, lost her husband, so she was helping bring in that harvest. But her work was needed. It served a place. She did what she could do. And that's got to be the case with us. I don't know that we ever need to get to the point where we're saying, oh, this work is a lot more important than that work. This work is of a lot more value, because if we are doing everything within our power to do, we're doing what the Lord expects. And so I encourage all of us not to dismiss ourselves. Not to say, I'm unqualified because I can't. But rather say, here's something I can do. And it may be something that appears very minimal. Picking up a pen and writing a little note to a brother or sister who's feeling a little discouraged. That's a cup of cold water. That's something that can be done. Picking up a telephone. I realize that's getting more complicated these days. You can't just pick up and ask for Sarah anymore. You know, you got to figure out all the buttons here. But I believe we're all capable of doing that, aren't we? We can understand how to dial, talk to someone, just thinking about you today. That may be your cup of cold water. That may be something that doesn't look like a whole lot, and I hope I'm not overblowing this, but could possibly have eternal ramifications. Knowing somebody's thinking about you. The jobs that you can do, do those jobs. But I don't want us to ever underestimate on the job training. Because I can't do something right now, at least well, doesn't mean I can never do that, whatever it is, quite well. Everything takes practice. You'd never expect a ball player to walk out and, you know, to be the absolute best he can be just at the first time he ever played the game. There's practice involved. And that's what we need to be doing as well. Try. Do what you can. Try to do all you can. But concentrate on the work you've been assigned to do. There may be times when we are tempted to be more interested in the work that belongs to somebody else. We may be more interested to say, you know, I could do that job better. I know how to make that better. Heard somebody say one time that in a lot of congregations, things get mixed up and you've got preachers doing the work of elders and elders doing the work of deacons, and you get all of that mixed up, and you look in our religious world around us to the point that what do they call the preacher in many places? He's called the pastor, isn't he? The title that's reserved for elders. And you've got deacons in some churches that are doing the work that properly belongs to an elder. Look for the work you're to do it, and do it your best. And it doesn't mean we can't encourage someone else. And it doesn't mean that we can't help someone else. But it does mean that we're doing what we're called on to do. I think a third point that we can see in this particular chapter is somewhat on the negative side. What we find is that there are occasions when there may be some who feel like that they are too good to do the work at hand. Look with me at verse 5. It says, "And next to them the Tekoites repaired." Now your translation may sound a little bit different than the ESV here. So I want you to listen to what the ESV, how this is translated. Let's pick up and read it again. "Next to them the Tekoites repaired, but their nobles would not stoop to serve their Lord." Here was a group of people who were called on to do the work, but they would not do it. They felt like they were too good. And I would say that whether you were repairing that wall in Jerusalem or whether you're working right now, that there's something that is 100% accurate. And it's the fact that we can be discouraged when someone feels like this. When someone looks at a job at hand and says, "No, that's not anything that I need to be involved in." And whether they say it or not, there's an attitude given that I am too good for the work that I'm called on to do. So what causes that to happen? We see it here in Nehemiah 3. We find it within the work of any local church, typically. You've got that element who are not working. You know, sometimes that can be caused just by laziness. We think about what the writer of Proverbs said when he said, "Whoever is slack in his work is a brother to him who destroys." Someone may say, "Well, I'm too good for this work," and it may just be an excuse for the fact that just plain out lazy. Don't want to be involved. Don't feel like that this is something that's really that important. Or it may be, and I think this perhaps is the case more times than not, we're distracted by something else. Rather than putting our shoulders to the work, as other translations say here, we're actually putting our shoulders to other things, to things that are not nearly as important. Because what we find in 2 Timothy 4:10 is Paul saying that about one of his laborers, where he says, "For Demas, who is in love with this present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica." Demas had been a good worker, but Demas had put his shoulder to something else. He had abandoned the work that he had been called on to do. And then perhaps like these Tekoite nobles, there are some who just don't want to be bothered. "I've got things in my life. I want to be a nominal member of a local group. I want to have my name on the roll sheet. I'll be there for the meeting times, but don't expect anything else of me." Well, as we think about this point, one of the things we need to understand first is this. Let's make sure we're not in that number. Let's make sure that we're not the ones who are refusing to stoop in the service of the Lord. Let's make sure we're not the ones who are putting our shoulders to some other work besides the godly work we've been called on to do. And when we make sure we are not counted in that number, then let's just make sure we get to work. Notice over in verse 27, it says, "After him, the Tekoites repaired another section opposite the great projecting tower as far as the wall of Ophel." It almost seems like some of these Tekoites were pulling double duty. Makes you wonder if they were a little embarrassed of who was in their number. And to make up for those who were slack, they're making sure that they're doing the work that they're called on to do. And so I would encourage us, even if the majority of a group refuses to work, we join with the faithful minority. And we're doing the job that we're called on to do. I'd like to make one more point here from chapter 3. As we look at leaders who lead and as we look at people who are doing the work because they're available, and we look at those that may feel too good to work and not letting us just get discouraged by that. One other point I think that we need to make here, and that's the fact that when we are builders, Let's remember that the work begins at home. Look again to verse 10 with me. Verse 10 says, "And next to him Jediah repaired opposite his house." And as we look to verse 23, it says, "Then Benjamin and Hashub repaired opposite their house." We look at verse 28. "Above the horse gate, the priest repaired, each one opposite his own house." And in verse 30, "After him, Hananiah and Hanun repaired another section. After him, Meshullam repaired opposite his chamber." I think there's a valuable lesson for us that, yes, we all need to be busy working together. Yes, we need to carry out the work collectively that we are called on to do. But before we do that, we need to make our own personal repairs. We need to look inward first and see the areas where perhaps we need to work. Some things that need repairing in our own lives. And then we get busy helping others. Isn't that what the Lord said in regard to the Pharisees? When He said, "Do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when there is a log in your own eye, you hypocrite?" What? First take the log out of your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Do the work at home. And when the work at home is done, then you're going to see clearly the work that needs to be done collectively in working with and helping others. So, all of these people from all of these backgrounds worked together. And as they did that, the wall was completed. In fact, if we look at chapter 6 and verse 15, it says that within 52 days, what had taken 100 years to not get done was finished. Why? Because they had a leader who led. A man who got those who were willing to work actively involved in the work at hand. He knew that a wall mostly done was as ineffective as a broken down wall. It had to be completed. And as we look at that example from Nehemiah, we must make sure that we leave no area neglected. We think about the song that we sang just prior to the lesson. And the third stanza of that song begins by saying, "Leave no unguarded place." Nehemiah knew that. And we must understand that in our work for the Lord as well. That there must never be a place that is left unfinished. What did we read in Acts 20:27? "For I did not shrink from declaring to you the whole counsel of God." Verse 32, "And now I commend you to God and to the word of His grace, which is able to build you up and to give you the inheritance among those who are sanctified." That's what God expects of us. He wants everything that He has told us to do, done. And it will take us a lifetime to accomplish that. Because God says, as long as you have a breath within you, as long as you are able, whatever you're able to do in My service, that's exactly what I expect for you to do. So the question boils down to this, and that is, how is my work progressing? As an individual Christian, how am I doing? Am I making sure that I'm leading when I can? Am I making sure that I'm looking for jobs rather than excuses about why I'm unqualified? Am I looking to make sure that I'm not in that number who says, "Well, I'm just too important to be a part"? No, I'm active and I'm busy. And I'm cleaning up my own home first so that I can be ready to help in the work of the Lord. If I'm doing all of those things, I'm the kind of builder that God expects for me to be. Nehemiah 3 is a neglected chapter in many ways, but I believe it's one that even all these years later can encourage us to do the work that we've been called on to do. Maybe this evening you're not a Christian. God has called on you to work as well, Don't think that because you're not a Christian that God has no expectations. His first expectation is that you obey Him. That you do exactly what He said to do, to find that salvation that He offers us through His grace, to be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins, and to come out of that water ready for a job, ready to get busy. This evening, if you're ready to do that, or perhaps you've been a little delinquent in your building, it's something we can pray about. Now's the time to get right with God. Now's the time to start on that journey, to build as God has called on us to do. If you need to respond to His invitation, won't you come while we stand and sing together?